WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
For the first time ever, the Art Institute of Chicago is showcasing the work of Frida Kahlo. I'm Susie Ahn, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The focus of the new exhibition is about a pivotal month Kahlo spent in Paris, her first and only trip to Europe, and the friendship she formed with avant-garde bookbinder Mary Reynolds. I sat down with Caitlin Haskell, who curated the exhibition, and asked her, why now?
First of all, the fact that the museum has not done a Kahlo exhibition, the time is always right to do that. Mm-hmm. But I would say in some ways this exhibition builds on the centennial of surrealism. But I would say it sort of came from a research discovery that my co-curators and I made. We were reading Kahlo's letters, and we were just so inspired at that moment. We thought we need to tell this story now because it's so incredible. It hasn't been told before, and really the Art Institute is the only place that could do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we get to the friendship portion of this, what was Frida Kahlo even doing in Paris in the first place?
So Kahlo spends a little bit of January, February, and March 1939 in Paris. She's there largely at the invitation of André Breton, who had seen her work the previous year. So in 1938, Breton goes to Mexico. He spends time with both Diego Rivera and Kahlo, and he's introduced to her work, and he thinks it's incredible. He thinks that it is sort of realizing some of the principles of surrealism that he's been writing about, but that he hasn't seen manifested in painting in Europe. And because of that encounter with both Kahlo and Reynolds, André Breton spoke with some of the gallerists, the friends that he knew, first Julian Levy, who had a gallery in New York, and says, you've got to try to arrange an exhibition. So that is actually Frida Kahlo's first solo exhibition. It takes place at Julian Levy Gallery in November of 1938. He presents 25 of Kahlo's pictures, and she is there also in New York, sort of welcoming visitors into the space, causing something of a sensation herself. And all of the works that were not included, or that were not sold, rather, from the Levy exhibition go on to Paris to be part of an exhibition that Breton organizes called Mexique. And that was presented at a gallery called Renue École from March 10th to March 25th, 1939.
And so Frida is there, but it seems like she didn't have a good time.
Say the least. I mean, at the beginning, she was really quite furious with Breton for a variety of reasons. Some of those have to do with just sort of general hospitality, and they hadn't really planned ahead too well. And so the idea was that maybe Kahlo would just stay with Breton and his wife, the artist Jacqueline Lamba, and their small daughter, Aube. And after 72 hours, Kahlo had had enough of that. And so she leaves and starts staying at a hotel. Then other things, she starts realizing things like Breton hasn't secured a gallery space. Kahlo's paintings are stuck in customs. And then she learns that she won't be having a solo exhibition. She'll be presented as part of this larger sort of thematic show that Breton has envisioned called Mexique. And at that point, she was really just about ready to call the whole thing off and leave. And we get that sort of that sense of frustration in the letters that Kahlo was writing to one of her lovers, Nicolas Marai. And in fact, we have some of these letters in the exhibition. one of them written from the American hospital in Paris. So around the time that Kahlo is just so fed up that she's ready to leave, she falls ill. And she's in fact so ill that she needs to spend time in hospital. And while she's there, Mary Reynolds sort of begins to come to her aid.
Yeah. Did they even know each other before this point?
They had never met in person, but they were close enough. Their social circles overlapped. So in the exhibition, for example, people can see the address book that Kahlo brought with her to Paris. And we have it opened to the letter D for Duchamp. And Duchamp was Mary Reynolds' partner. Prior to setting sail for Paris, Kahlo had been introduced by a man by the name of Walter Pock to Duchamp. And basically, Walter Pock had said, you know, he's going to appreciate you. And if you need some help, look to Duchamp. And it's true, Duchamp did help Kahlo quite a bit while she was in Paris. But really, the friendship begins with Reynolds, who Kahlo refers to as this marvelous American woman who takes great care of her. And basically, Kahlo was invited to live in Mary's home. And Mary Reynolds also sort of paid off the hotel bills and made sure that she could just really prepare for the exhibition and enjoy being in the creative space of her home.
Yeah, so this was a very serendipitous meeting of these
Certainly.
Two women. You know, Mary Reynolds is not quite a household name the way that Frida is,
No.
but she is an avant-garde bookbinder. Could you describe a little bit more of her work?
Yeah, so, you know, her work in French, the term is reliure, and what she would do is begin with a commercially available book and create a deluxe, one-of-a-kind sort of exterior housing for it, make a new cover. So designing with leathers and sometimes also with objects, creating a physical instantiation of what that literary work is about, whether it was poetry or a novel or even a book of drawings. Reynolds would give it some physical form so that it would exist in the world as an object. And her style was really quite versatile. You know, if she is doing a bookbinding for the work of Jean Cocteau, for example, it will sort of have the sinuous line, sort of almost the thread-like quality of a Cocteau drawing. If she's doing a bookbinding for Man Ray, who made many surrealist objects, it will sort of have the quality of a surrealist object itself. But there's always sort of this sense of a conversation taking place between Mary Reynolds and the author of the book. And those authors were often her friends, and they also spent a great deal of time in her home. And then also trying to sort of take the secret contents that are inside of a book and making those visible on the exterior.
I think it was a bookbinding for Man Ray that she did that had the kid gloves on the binding that,
yes.
that looked like, you know, someone was grabbing the book. I really loved that visual.
That's one of the, I think, the most successful bookbindings. And there's this sense of, you know, the title of that book in English would be Free Hands. And Reynolds is literally freeing your hands so that you can experience the delight of the works inside.
So then the meeting of these two, Frida Kahlo and Mary Reynolds, why was this a pivotal moment in Frida Kahlo's career?
Well, it's perhaps surprisingly to some visitors to the exhibition. I mean, Kahlo starts painting in the late 1920s, but she doesn't have her first solo exhibition until the fall of 1938. So this is really sort of the moment that she is making a name for herself as an artist who is every bit the equal of Diego Rivera. And in the first gallery of the exhibition, we quote some of the press around Kahlo's first show, where they're discussing sort of the rise of another Rivera, which is really, I think, quite surprising for people today who probably know Frida Kahlo's work
Absolutely.
Much better than Rivera's. But, you know, this is sort of the moment where her works are receiving an audience and sort of a critical evaluation, and also perhaps surprisingly, where she is part of the surrealist group. So that doesn't necessarily continue, you know, to a great extent after 1939-40. And I think, you know, this centennial of surrealism allows us a moment to sort of think about these what-ifs and why is Kahlo's work appealing to Breton at this time? And what does she think about being a surrealist? And at the time, she says really quite directly, you know, I never knew I was a surrealist till Breton came to Mexico and told me I was. Yet she's open to having her work presented in this context. And I think, you know, for someone like myself as a historian of the 20th century avant-garde, to see Kahlo's work really like squarely in the center of Paris surrealism, it's fascinating. And it sort of reorients your understanding of what are the conversations that are taking place there. And similarly, we can say the same thing for Mary Reynolds. She's not only at the center of the surrealist social group, she's convening them, right? So on a nightly basis, Man Ray is coming over. Duchamp keeps a studio, you know, in her home. She and Duchamp are decorating this house together. You know, she has Brancusi's work in the garden, inside the home, and also in her garden. There are Calder mobiles all around, as well as her own books and bookbindings and her surrealist library. So this was the part that was really exciting for us, was the opportunity to reintroduce and sort of reinsert Kahlo into that community where she actually spent time. And I said at the start of our interview that the Art Institute is the only museum that can do this. That's really quite true, because the Art Institute has the artworks and the library, all of the collections that were in Mary Reynolds' home.
The home is very much, as you were saying, just sort of the center of that artist community.
Yes, it is. And we've designed the exhibition to sort of give it a bit of a domestic feel. You know, and when you come to the exhibition, you'll see that the room of the show that is most about Mary Reynolds' home at 14 Rue Halley, you know, there's a table. You know, it's not individual pedestals. It is sort of a space of coming together. And really, my co-curators and I, Olivier Piliato and Tamar Horatishvili, and I tried to create sort of a sense of communion and a group portrait of the artists and writers who were together on a nightly basis at Mary Reynolds' home and with whom Kahlo spent time in 39.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned communion. I mean, I think of, you know, the things that Mary did for Frida at first kind of sounds like something a benefactor would do, but there was very much a friendship there. You know, the exhibition is called A Friendship with Mary Reynolds. Can you describe that friendship, what it was like?
Well, I think there was a real appreciation for each other as artists, and also an understanding that Kahlo and Reynolds had lives that mirrored each other in other ways, right? As partners of a very significant 20th century artists as well. And the way that Kahlo and Mary Reynolds were both inside and outside of the surrealist group paralleled each other. You know, they were sort of they are not the first names that come to mind when we think about what a surrealist maker is producing, and yet they're in that context. And I think part of what our show is trying to do is sort of think about, well, is surrealism really this very sort of theoretically driven movement, or is it also about the interactions of these human beings and how they helped each other? So at the close of the exhibition, you know, you can we have a letter that Mary Reynolds wrote to Kahlo, sort of saying how much she already misses her, and that there's sort of a sense of like a hole in their house now that she has left, and hoping that there might be an invitation for Diego Rivera to make some murals in Paris, because that might be an enticement for Kahlo to come back. So I think they understood each other in a very sort of fundamental way and were sympathetic to each other. And they also were kind of fearless as artists. You know, in Kahlo's self-portraits, you know, there is this very sort of unflinching sort of disclosure of what's happening in her life. And I think Mary Reynolds, in a different way, had that same fearlessness too, and had devoted herself really to her work and sort of was all in on being an artist and also a supporter of this community in Paris.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a matter of just months of this deep friendship, being in the same space, but then Frida leaves. Did they stay friends after she left Paris?
You know, there are indications of sort of an ongoing conversation. In the exhibition, we include a photograph of Mary Reynolds by Man Ray that Kahlo kept. If you visit the Casa Azul, you'll also see that there are works by Yves Tanguy that are very similar. It's almost like sort of companion pieces with what Mary Reynolds had in her collection, too. But, you know, it's, I would say this is about a very sort of chance intersection of lives that then became an inspiration, and that they sort of, you know, just could sort of understand the position that they both were in as makers, as partners of artists, and as surrealists who are also interested in celebrating ordinary life and sort of creating spaces of spaces where artists could do their best work.
And so you mentioned some of the things that people will see when they go to this exhibition. Mm-hmm. Of course, Frida's work, some of Mary Reynolds' bookbinding. What else can people expect?
Well, the checklist has about 100 objects, and you know, it's a very intimate space. So you think of very sort of tactile objects, you know, the sorts of things that you might also find in a home, but. You know, there are Mary Reynolds bookbindings. There are wonderful Frida Kahlo self-portraits. We've been extremely specific in selecting Kahlo's works that were included in the 1938 Julian Levy exhibition and also in Mexique. But then we also sort of have a group portrait. So the figures who were part of the community in Paris that often convened at Mary Reynolds' home. So that would be people like Yves Tanguy, Constantin Brancusi, Duchamp. You know, those are some of the examples of works that you'll see. And we also have letters. So, you know, to give a sense of this very tight-knit community and allowing, you know, Kahlo to sort of speak in her own voice and recount what it was like for her to be in Paris, those letters are very special too. And they're great objects. You know, they're not just something that we wanted to quote from. We wanted to have them present in that space because they're love letters, you know, and Kahlo has signed them with sometimes several kisses at the end.
Oh yeah. I love seeing that.
Yeah.
Well, the exhibition is open now. How long can people see it?
It will be on view until July 13th.
All right, got to get on that now. We've been talking with Caitlin Haskell, the Gary C. and Francis Comer Senior Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the Art Institute of Chicago. Thank you so much, Caitlin.
Thank you, Susie.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Micah Yasin and edited by Meha Ahmed. You can support the work we do on Reset by liking and subscribing to our podcast. We drop new episodes every weekday with a special one on Saturday. You can also sign up for our newsletter. Head to wbez.org/resetnews. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again soon.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely.